At the end of the day, we can wax philosophic all day back and forth, right? But without practice, without action, actually being involved in some type of way, whether that is creating a virtual lesson that goes over some idea that you think that many folks are aware of and then contribute it to fully helpful liberatory academics, or as an educator coming out and organizing with the Racial Justice Organizing Committee around the recent demands that we're putting on the school district, or around Black Lives Matter Week of Action in schools. I think that all those things together are meant to create sustainable and viable structures to encourage dialogue.
Hi, and welcome to the Shrinks on Third podcast, highlighting diverse voices for social change. I'm psychologist Cindy Ariel.
And I'm psychologist Julie Mayer. And today, our guests are Samuel Reed III, who goes by Reed, and Ishmael Jimenez, two core members of the Teacher Action Group, TAG.
Most TAG, TAG members, are full-time teachers, but the group also includes nurses, counselors, and allies of public education, from all types of learning environments, who believe that education is essential to the preservation of civil and human rights and is a tool of human liberation.
Reed is a teacherpreneur. As you'll hear in the episode, he has many accomplishments and has decided to put his current primary efforts into helping promote economic and financial empowerment.
Ishmael Jimenez recently spearheaded the founding of the PHLA, Philly Hub for Liberatory Academics. It's at phlaed.org, which received a Bread and Roses COVID organizing grant to curate liberatory educational content. Liberatory education centers around consciousness-raising principles for social change and liberation.
Both of these dedicated teachers have unique perspectives on social justice. Welcome to the Shrinks on Third, Reed and Ishmael.
Welcome, guys.
We're going to talk to you today about the really interesting things you're doing. So, Ishmael, could you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
Well, I have been a teacher in the Philadelphia School District for the last 12 years. I knew I wanted to become a teacher when I was like 16 in high school. And I also knew that teaching for me at that point was also like a form of activism. So at a young age, I connected teaching and activism together, and even speaking truthfully about history as a form of activism. So when I graduated high school with a 1.6 GPA, my counselor even said, "Are you sure college is right for you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to go to community college, I'm going to go to Temple, and then I'm going to teach in Philadelphia." So my plan was very clear, even though I hated school. And it's weird that I would end up teaching in schools as I got older, but I hated school so much, but I loved education so much. And that love for education drove me to share that feeling with other people. And at 16, I don't know what happened, but that all hit me all at once, that I loved education, I hated school, but being an educator in a school can switch up the game. And I just kept on going.
Ishmael, when you say that you hated school but love education, it sounds like there was something about school that didn't work for you.
Yeah. So my parents, when I was younger, moved us from the city to the suburbs. And when I first got there, young elementary school, I had problems. Teased, bullied, you know. I was called the N-word. I'm not even dark, you know what I mean? Like, and I remember in fourth grade, I used to have like this huge stuttering problem. And I rose my hand to answer a question in class, and I started stuttering, and the class laughed, and the teacher's like, "Oh, don't mind him. His people talk like that." And I think that really started my hate for school as almost like a dehumanizing type of reality. And it wasn't just her. In sixth grade, another teacher called my friend the N-word and then denied it. And I got a bunch of petitions signed in sixth grade, and they just sent me to a different school, me and the other child to a different school. And as I got older, it just clicked on me that, you know, I could have got lost easily. If my parents didn't put me in the situation that we were in, if, you know, one missed move, it would have been a wrap. And too many of our children find themselves in those situations. And I relate to that. I empathize, more than empathize, like I could have been in that situation. So that definitely, that's what motivated me to become a teacher from multiple angles and even figuring that out.
So then what are you doing now?
Yeah, I teach African-American history in Philadelphia, which is a mandatory subject here, only here, I think. I think Chicago passed something recently. And I'm also a member of several organizations, of course, doing teacher activism work that's associated not only with my practice in the classroom, but also with my, you know, philosophy and my goal, really, to have a bunch of people dedicate themselves to lifelong learning and then finding like-minded people in my squad, quote unquote, that is interested in pursuing the same thing. Along with teaching, I've also taught post-secondary college social studies classes. I guess that's it. And without going into more detail.
Maybe before we do go into more detail, we could hear from Samuel Reed III, a.k.a. Reed.
Yeah, hey. Thanks for having me. And by way of background, and I'm honored to be here, I'm a product of the Philadelphia public school system. I attended Overbrook High School. Shout out to Wilt Chamberlain and all the greats that came out of Overbrook High School.
Yeah.
I attended Cheney State University, got my degree in computer science, and all the time, while in terms of my origin story, I always had this interest in business and hustling, partly by requirement. I grew up in a single parent household, mother underemployed. And I did see education as like some gateway opportunity. I liked learning. I didn't like school per se as much as well, but I did love learning. But I knew that education was kind of going to be some lever for me. So hence went to college, but always had this interest. You know, I started some little side businesses while I was in college. And then I wanted to leverage my interest in business at a higher level. So I went and got my master's degree in business administration. Went down to Atlanta University, now it's Clark Atlanta University, got my MBA, and I didn't want to be a corporate hack. I didn't want to go in corporate America. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start a formal business, but in my wisdom or lack of wisdom, I knew I didn't have enough social capital or financial capital to kind of do the business that I wanted to do out of graduate school. So I joined the Peace Corps. And my friends thought I was crazy. My mother was crying, oh, what did I do wrong? Like, because I'm taking all my talent and I'm going to volunteer. Fast forward, I start a business in Botswana. After my Peace Corps tour, I started an information service and training company, kind of like akin to an African.com, if you will, right? And unfortunately, we were undercapitalized and we went bankrupt. But it was my failures are my building blocks for my successes. My wife and I decided to reboot. My wife is from Botswana and my kids are from Botswana. So my kids, and they're all grown now. I consider them like real African-Americans in essence, because they really have this sensibility of Africa and America with an American dad and your mother being from Botswana. I decided to come back to the States and I was going to teach business, but I said, what could I do that's even more impactful in education, and middle school education in particular was where I landed. There was a Peace Corps Fellows program. I started teaching at a middle school, and I've been teaching for over 22 years. But then having that business background and my education background, once I got my teaching credentials, my teaching bona fides, safe, like knowing what I was doing in the classroom, because that's a whole nother struggle on its own.
Yeah.
Then I started, I was also doing it a little bit, but not realizing, but I was doing this entrepreneurial thing in the classroom. And now I've actually combined those elements and I call myself a teacherpreneur.
Yeah. I had to look that up.
Yeah, I bring in elements of my entrepreneur background and my education background. But again, I'm doing it with the whole purpose of social good at the forefront. And so I tell people that I side hustle for social good. And I've been fortunate like obtain grants for classroom projects, but also working with great organizations and folks like Ishmael to bring in grant funding for projects that we want to do for activism as well. And I like to say that I became, unlike Ish, where that activism might have been implanted in him early, I became an accidental activist, right? And the one big point was when the middle school where I worked was slated for a school closure and takeover by another school. And so I began to connect with my resources, the families and communities, and we organized a campaign, and we actually got a stay of relief from our school being taken over. But eventually the school was shut down, but not at the point, I guess it kind of got shut down a little bit more in our terms, but not completely. But that experience really heightened my activism, or made me recognize more myself as an activist.
You took action, you stood up, and you actually got some results.
Oh, for sure.
How did you two guys come together? Like, what is your relationship?
Yeah, so the teacher action group, which is a major incubator of teacher activism in the city, was the space where a lot of like-minded, progressive activists, educators convene. And so Ish and I, we've been working out in the teacher activist community through Teacher Action Group, through Working Educators, and more recently, and he'll talk a little bit more about it, through the Philadelphia Hub for Liberatory Academics.
Yes, please explain what that is to us. That sounds so interesting.
I'm gonna let Ish talk a little bit about the hub.
Please.
Yes, so the Philadelphia Hub for Liberatory Academics came out of originally a conversation that I had with the social studies curriculum specialist with the School District of Philadelphia after the schools closed due to COVID. And while we were talking, he mentioned, well, he's like, you know, the school district has nothing planned, right? And that I don't know what this online thing's gonna look like. It's probably gonna be a hot mess. And I agreed. I was like, yeah, so what can we do about that? And we spitballed some ideas. Nothing like the Philly Hub came up yet, but definitely some way where we can gather resources and virtual lessons and help folks have access to it, we thought was very important, especially for students. But the larger vision, of course, didn't come to fruition. And then another colleague of ours, Kaziah Ridgway, she does virtual learning. And she, that first week at the schools closed, before that week was over, she was doing virtual lessons with her students.
Wow.
And so with other students, with other schools, and which is just like, you know, I put a call out, I wrote like this proposal piece from that conversation and seeing Kaziah, and I threw it out to some folks. Reed contacted me. Reed's a design thinker, so he's all about it, and a couple of other colleagues. And we sat down together after a couple of meetings to even draw up a kind of philosophical orientation of our resource education gathering virtual lesson site, which eventually we developed a website named the Philly Hub of Liberatory Academics, PHLAED.org. Reed was able and sophisticated enough to get us a grant as soon as we started around the COVID issue. And since then, we've been putting together and requesting folks to come up. We bought a platform that we're offering to other organizations throughout the city to use, which is much more adaptable, much more of a larger bandwidth than Zoom. We also have connected with other organizations just to make it very clear, like our website can be a resource for you. And we're slowly just developing that and gathering it. But I just want to emphasize that the premise of the Philadelphia Hub for Liberatory Academics is that we are seeking educators with critical pedagogy, but not just in traditional education academic fields, also in life skills. Also, like, we've gotten hit up from a carpenter asking how he can contribute. So it's virtual, but it's also attempting to build a larger community. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Reed.
No, you summed it up really well.
It sounds fantastic. It sounds like, I haven't really heard the word liberatory before, but it sounds like what this is about is just giving people the ability to have their own lives the way they want them to be.
I've been thinking a lot about the fact that when I first heard about PHLA and I looked it up and went on the website, I had never heard about it either. And obviously, it's about education and liberation and the pedagogy of the oppressed. I mean, I've since, you know, read about it. I have been talking about it. And it's been very disturbing that, as, you know, white people, like, we didn't even know this kind of education was a thing. That's disturbing.
Ish probably could speak a little bit more to this as well, because he's participated in like freedom schools, right? And so like the freedom schools, which Ish could talk more about, provided like real space for liberatory academics. But when we saw that COVID was happening, like how can we offer those spaces still for young people in the community at large? And so we were able to apply for a Bread and Roses COVID organizing grant and, you know, receive funding so that we could have a real dynamic platform. It's called Hoppin', which is like a really dynamic venue space where we can convene training, we can convene education, we can convene a community, but as well, we can curate, you know, resources and material on the website as well. And so I feel really fortunate to be a part of this work. But if you really pull the onion, the skin off of the onion, Teacher Action Group has been an incubator of this type of work since we started over 10 years ago. And so, and Ish and I have been intricately involved in that work as well. And so it just builds on top of the shoulders of the work that's been done before. So again, and all the stuff we were doing is not like completely new, because like again, freedom schools have been going on forever, right? And so we're just building on the work that's been done already.
Well, it sounds like if you can, you know, get it out on a platform, you can build on it in a way that you couldn't one-on-one in person. This is much bigger. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're taking it to another level.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you offer, and what are you hoping students of all ages will get from the work that you do?
Like we was just saying, the Philly Hub of Liberatory Academics, kind of like birthplace, I would even place it is in TAG, kind of, because TAG is where a lot of these relationships with these colleagues were developed. That in the Caucus of Working Educators, which ironically also came out of TAG. So when we're saying all this, it's like we're trying to offer not only to our own educational networks, but also to the larger Philadelphia community, the ability to stay connected, but in a way which is rooted in liberatory academics or critical pedagogy. Also, we want to offer folks the ability to host conferences virtually in a way that is multi-leveled, where you have a stage and you have breakout sessions all happening simultaneously, and access to potentially the vendors and other organizations that you can reach out to during the virtual kind of session. So like those type of things is what we're offering. And simply if you visit our website at phlaed.org, you can see that we have different categories and we're still looking for material from folks. So I like to consider ourselves right now in the infancy stage. We were just birthed really like a month and a half ago. But as we're starting to get our bearings together, as we're starting to like see patterns and reach out to our networks, we're seeing a lot of interest and folks want to contribute some material to us and also follow us on social media because we've been also supporting educational activism right now that's happening due to the uprisings, due to George Floyd stuff recently. We actually even co-signed Educator and Student March for Black Lives that happened last weekend. So like we not only see it as a resource gathering, but also a potential jumping off point to take it to another level in the sense of building bridges across communities, so specifically in Philly.
What do you see like as we move into September and there's all these meetings about school and education, like what are you guys thinking?
Well, we could spend like a whole lot of time on that, but what I'm thinking is that we really don't know, and although September is close, it's kind of far away as well. And what I've done specifically, and people have different approaches of dealing with this, what I've done is kind of focused on the work that I'm doing now that supports what's needed now, and that work that I'm doing now was actually incubated at the onset of COVID-19. And so when we were doing distant learning in our classrooms, because I'm home more, it afforded me time to slow down, to breathe, to be mindful. And so I started in this program that was offered by the Arts and Business Council. It was a design thinking institute offered by the Arts and Business Council during the same time that we were doing distant learning in our schools. And through spending time doing this design thinking work, I jettisoned to start a small business development program called Small Business 101 Side Hustler Accelerator Program. And part of the reason I started that program was I was incubating, like, what can I do when I'm looking at everything that's happening COVID-wise, racial tension. And then at the end of the school year, one of our students is tragically shot. Gun violence. It wasn't police gun violence, but anyway, nonetheless, it was a student passed. And this young man, only time he would really perk up in my class is when I talked about money, finance, because I teach a lot about financial literacy. And so I'm like, man, I didn't know this young man. He had a network outside of school. He played the violin. He had this amazing network of friends and community that we would have never known. But I did know he would spark up when I would talk about money and finance. And I'm like, you know what? I need to do a program that's going to bridge young folks and old folks that are actually trying to make a difference through creating businesses, sustaining businesses, developing side hustles. And so I'm pretty much focusing on that work because I think it's significant and important. Because actually, when you think about it, there's a big opportunity for wealth transfer that's happening. And if we're so caught up and worried about COVID, I mean, we have to worry about it, but we have to also think about the future as well.
Yeah.
And so September is going to come and I'm going to be ready for September, but I'm not stressing myself out about September, partly because I have a lot of things on my plate already.
It sounds like, Reed, you have taken advantage of the fact that things had to slow down with COVID. And you can spend some time thinking and coming up with new ideas. And that's a terrific one. The idea of educating people financially is so crucial. And then helping people start businesses is, it's just wonderful. So that's a terrific thing to have done with your time because of COVID.
Yeah. And I mean, I was intentional about making sure that young folks were going to be included. So I had tickets. Folks could buy tickets to sponsor young folks that are in the program. And so I have two of my current students that are in the program, but I have another young lady. I'm going to give a shout out to We Love Philadelphia because she's from that organization. And, oh, man, she's just amazing. She has her own health and beauty company, with, like, lifting up imagery of young women. And she's just on fire. And then I have folks that are in my age range that are working for 30 years and now they want to start a food business. Or I actually have people that are like looking at how they can have businesses that are actually dealing with issues like Black Lives Matter, right? And so it's really exciting work. And I'm really blessed and fortunate to be doing this work.
That's terrific. Ishmael, how do you feel about what's happening with like schools starting? Is it going to be live? Is it going to be remote? How do you feel about all that?
I think regardless of what happens, nobody's going to be happy. I think there's no good solution to this. I can speak personally. I have four boys, 13 to 5. So I'll have a kid in kindergarten, fourth grade, sixth grade, and eighth grade next year. So if it's 100% virtual where I have to teach, my wife will be working. Her job is considered essential. But like for my children, I don't know what we're going to do. We're already talking about hiring someone as a tutor temporarily. If they do the hybrid model, which you're talking about now, where teachers would teach different groups of kids every other day for 4 days a week, I don't see any good coming out of this. I'm bracing. I'm hoping for a vaccine, not to be cheesy about it, because there's something different about the classroom. And the relationships and how you build that. And the kids need that also. You know, my five-year-old will be going crazy inside the house all the time staring at a computer screen.
And thus you will too.
Yes. I mean, as you can tell, I think I've gained more grades over this time period. I don't know about you, you know, but it's been very stressful at first. Like when schools first closed and all four of the boys were home with me and my wife had to go to work and made me realize I wasn't built. My wife carries a lot of water. So, but after a couple months at home, it's starting to stabilize and get a routine down. And when the school year starts, whatever happens, I know I will not be happy, but I'll have to deal with it.
I'm sort of anticipating that whoever has to actually go in a few weeks in, maybe the whole thing will get shut down again anyway, and we'll all be home.
Yeah.
And you'll have your virtual classroom and your family.
It's weird, you know, how a lot of people read, like, just pointed that being home allowed you to, like, do a little bit more work, slow it down. And it's like being home actually is a much more bigger distraction for me. because before COVID, I would be able to go to meetings after work and then go to another meeting and come home at like 8. And it's like, I did all this stuff, all this work. But now it's like, I'm always like, oh, well, aren't we spending time right now together for like this 2 hours? I'm like, okay, I can push off that meeting. So it's been a bit much harder reality right now to like stay focused and get work done on the level that needs to get done.
Yeah, it impacts people differently. You have young kids, so it's really hard.
I'm an empty nester, so we're at a different stage.
Life goals right there. So
And then I've hustled my house out, so I don't make, like, my office, this used to be my son's room, like, so now I've like hustled the house so he can't like make claims to come back.
Got that happening here too. I know what you mean. Yeah, it's good when they're gone because then you can use their space. It's perfect. Ishmael, you have a few years.
Yes.
So is there anything else you guys wanted to make sure we get across to people who are listening? Something you want them to really know or remember besides phla.org?
If folks are interested in my small business accelerator programs, side hustle program, they could just simply email me at sriii2000@gmail.com and I can get information out to them. I'm also doing coaching for folks that are interested in starting up a business. I'm doing one-on-one coaching and also helping people with ways of tracking their income through a program called FreshBooks Accounting. So if folks are interested, again, you can email me at sriii2000@aol.com.
Excellent. That's perfect.
To learn more about Teacher Action Group, which is a major incubator for the work that we do and the work that's happening in the city, you can go to tagphilly.org and join the newsletter. We're always sending out information about what's happening in the city and also in the country at large as well.
So I just have one little last question maybe for you, Ishmael. Is there something that you can say about what you want people to get out of the projects you're working on, out of the Philly Hub for Liberatory Academics? What's the hope?
The hope really is to expand networks, encourage collaboration across the city with like-minded educational associated type people. Like I said, they don't necessarily have to be a teacher to be involved. I would also like to be able to help folks get plugged in to some of the work because, you know, not only does PHLA play a role, but there's other organizations like the Racial Justice Organizing Committee that does a lot of work around with students and around schools. Then there's Melanated Educators Collective, another group that came out of TAG, but focuses on networking for Black and Brown educators across the city, whether they work in public charter or private. And so the ultimate goal overall with all these formations and all these, for me personally, is to really just raise the level of consciousness of folks to a regard of like what they're aware of, what they're involved in. Because at the end of the day, we can like wax philosophic all day back and forth, right? But without practice, without action, actually being involved in some type of way, whether that is creating a virtual lesson that goes over some idea that you think that many folks are aware of and then contribute it to Philly Hub for Liberatory Academics, or as an educator, coming out and organizing with the Racial Justice Organizing Committee around the recent demands that we're putting on the school district or around Black Lives Matter Week of Action in schools. I think that all those things together are meant to create sustainable and viable structures to encourage dialogue. Because I think the more people talk openly and honestly with each other, the more change you will have, the more ideas get developed, the more understanding is developed. And really, that's my hope as an educator within my classroom amongst my students, as an activist outside in the larger community, and just as a human being.
Wow. Thank you both for joining us today. This was so interesting and informative, and I really hope that things go well for you going forward. It sounds like you're off to a great start with this new platform, so all the best to you.
Thanks.
Great.
Well, thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
You can follow The Shrinks on Third on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Till next time, take care.